I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am that host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. Today is Thursday. Next hour, we'll have Starla Brown in with Americans for Prosperity. We'll take a look at what they're working on here in Mississippi and talk a little bit, probably about, kind of want to get her take on transfer payments. You understand, Americans for Prosperity is a very free market group about getting the government out of the way for prosperity. That's their mission, is prosperity. And I've been kind of, you know, I've been thinking about this college loan forgiveness stuff, and I've brought up the fact that with Medicare Part D, taxpayers are paying for senior citizens' medications. We should be outraged about that as well. No offense to you seniors out there who are taking part of Medicare Part D. You've allowed a corrupt government to create the most expensive pharmaceuticals on planet Earth here in this country with their stranglehold on our medical system. But is it fair? There's just so many things. When I started thinking about transfer payments, our selective outrage does not suit us. It does not do us any good, I don't believe, because, you know, these are the stories that the media, even conservative media, is guilty of this. They'll pull you by the nose to get you to focus in really strongly on one thing while just ignoring the multitude of other things. And Joe Biden made a speech the other day, I played yesterday, about he beat Big Pharma. But I want to focus on the other part of the clip that I had where he essentially laid out how much the government is going to help out seniors when it comes to drugs in this fight against Big Pharma. I hate to tell Joe Biden or anybody else, when the government pays for anybody's drugs, you're helping Big Pharma. You're lining the pockets of Big Pharma. Anyway, we'll talk about that next hour with Starla Brown, along with, I'm sure, a lot of other stuff. If there is any dead air after a commercial break today, I'm alone here in the studio. Please call, send help. I brushed my teeth with Jackson water by mistake this morning. Now, I started out strong, as I have been for several weeks now, which is brushing my teeth with bottled water because I live in a third world country. But I just, you know, it's habit. I am brushing. I walk around as I brush. I walk around, and I came back in, and just this reflex of decades of teeth brushing experience, and I turned on the tap and put my toothbrush under the tap before I went to another round of brushing, and I did that a couple of times before I realized, oh my God, what have I done? I've put Jackson water into my mouth hole. So I'm just kind of waiting for the side effects. I've grown pretty fond of my colon and small intestine. I hope I get to keep it all, but we'll just see if there's any dead air when I come back. Now, in my defense, too, I was listening to the Clay Edwards Show when I was doing this, and one of his callers said we needed to get serious about the war on drugs, and this distracted me. We don't have enough police on the streets to stop the murders and the robberies. How many more do you think you need to add to really get serious about the war on drugs? We can't keep drugs out of prisons. There was a headline just a few days ago of military people at some of the bases. We've had some record overdoses in the military. You can't keep them out of military barracks or prisons. But if we just do enough, I'm sure we can keep all drugs out of the continental United States. Yeah, you keep trying that. You keep trying that. You keep banging your head against that wall. Let me know how that works out to you. Just another 50 years of real effort, and I'm sure you'll win that war on drugs any day now. So I blame that caller. I blame that caller if I suffer any ill effects of a Jackson Water teeth brushing. Quotes of the day today. This was Gore Vidal. Gore Vidal said, "The genius of the American ruling class is that it has been able to make the people think that they have had something to do with the electing of presidents for 200 years when they've had absolutely nothing to say about the candidates or the policies or the way the country is run." Chris Hedges takes it a little bit further. Chris Hedges is really a fantastic writer. He's a left-wing guy, but he's an intellectual guy. He's like anybody else on the left. I certainly would love to sit down, have a beer, talk things out, debate them on it. I disagree with him on stuff, but he is a fantastic writer. And even Jimmy Dore, comedian that I talk about, the progressive comedian I talk about the other day, he did a clip where, you know, there's some socialist went to a MAGA event, and the MAGA attendee and the socialist found very many points of agreement. And this is kind of the basis of this show. If people were to ever wake up, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, ever woke up and realized we're all getting screwed by the same people, we just took the time to realize that, our other differences and disagreements aside, we might actually make some changes in this country. But they've got us where they want us, divided into these two camps. Chris Hedges wrote this. It's a little long for a quote of the day, but I think it's worth reading. He said, "The slow motion coup is over. Corporations and the billionaire class have won. There are no institutions, including the press, an electoral system that is little more than legalized bribery, the imperial presidency, the courts, or the penal system that can be defined as democratic. Only the fiction of democracy remains. Politics is a spectacle, a tawdry carnival act where the constant jockeying for power by the ruling class dominates the news cycles as if politics were a race to the Super Bowl. The real business of ruling is hidden, carried out by corporate lobbyists who write the legislations, banks that loot the treasury, the war industry, and an oligarchy that determines who gets elected and who does not. It is not impossible to vote. It is impossible to vote against the interest of Goldman Sachs, the fossil fuel industry, or Raytheon, no matter which party is in office. The moment any segment of the population, left or right, refuses to participate in this illusion, the face of inverted totalitarianism resembles the face of classical totalitarianism, as Julian Assange is experiencing. Our corporate overlords and militarists prefer the decorum of George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden, but they worked closely with Trump and are willing to do so again." So there you go. It's an oligarchy. It has nothing to do with what the people want here in this country. And a lot of people on the right and the left know this. If we ever got together, whew, I can't imagine the power the people would actually have, but we're too busy screaming at each other. More about that in just a little bit. You know, I read these things, I realize how different I am from the typical conservative that I speak to every day, and I would imagine people who listen to me, who consider themselves traditional conservatives, probably see those differences. When I open the show on blasting the failed war on drugs, there's a lot of conservatives that are knee-jerk emotionally repelled to such a message, although the failures in the drug war are so obvious to point out. But conservatives are always upset by the current government, but they worship the last government. It doesn't matter if it's Trump or Bush or Reagan. The government is only bad. The government is only a problem when the other guys are in control. Only time conservatives can see the abuse of government is when the other side is in control. It's maybe one of the great benefits of having the mental patient that we have in the White House right now. More and more people will wake up to the abuses of their government. The FBI was bad under Donald Trump. It was bad under George W. Bush. It was bad under Ronald Reagan. People don't realize it's bad until Joe Biden's running the show, and they start to see through these institutions. And of course, Democrats are lost. They're like children who believe the government is their daddy. And their biggest problem is that when the right is in charge, the government is just not being daddy enough to them. As George Carlin said, and everybody should take it to heart, he said it more succinctly than I can. He said, "It's a big club and you ain't in it." So we're going to talk a little bit today. It feels like they are baiting you into a civil war here in this country. We'll get to that. And I also wanted to look at, man, what they are doing, the end of prosperity. Emmanuel Macron in France last week announced it. the end of prosperity in the Western world. You've had it too good for too long, according to these people that have taken control of the levers of power in Western societies. You've had it too good too long, and they are telling you straight to your face, out in the open, that you better start lowering your expectations for the comfort and prosperity in your lives. We'll see how long that lasts, but there's some stories, even out of Switzerland. Switzerland's a pretty free place, or formerly free place, like everywhere else, but there's a pretty amazing headline out of that. And then, I haven't even played this clip yet. I cut and pasted a link to a story about Hillary Clinton and what her plans are going forward. She, according to this headline, has said she will never run for president again, but she is going to dedicate herself to one thing. We'll listen to that clip together. I haven't even heard it. The headline alone was enough for me to put it into my show notes. We'll hear what Hillary Clinton has to say when we come back. Stick around. You know, Hillary Clinton just won't go away, will she? I don't, you know, we're going to play a clip from her. She's saying that she will not run for president. Obviously, the woman is a pathological, psychopathic liar. It just feels to me, I mean, who else would the Democrats have to run at 2024? The idea that Joe Biden's going to run for re-election is just so patently absurd. Absolutely absurd. Of course, we live in times of absurdity, so maybe I'll be surprised, but who else do they have? It's not Kamala Harris. And a lot of the old Clintonistas are coming back into the White House. John Podesta. Did you see this? That John Podesta has been brought in by the Biden White House to run climate policy in the United States. If you have not seen I've talked about it many times on this show, but these people have been gone. They're back, so maybe it's a new name to people. John Podesta and his brother, I can't remember his brother's name. Just do an internet search for Podesta artwork. This was around the time of Pizzagate. The people started sharing these things. These are sick, twisted, evil people. John Podesta in his climate czar or whatever his position is now. This guy is as creepy as they get. I mean, like skin-crawlingly creepy. There's a lot of corruption and nasty people in politics. He's one of these people that just it really makes your skin crawl. And do an internet search. Be warned, this is not to be done with your children in the room. A lot of bizarre images of children being abused in the artwork of the Podesta brothers. This guy has infested himself back into our government again. I guess he's never really gone, particularly when Democrats are in control. But so some of these Clintonistas are still circling around. He was involved. I believe he was campaign chair for Hillary Clinton. So it just feels to me like this is all being set up for the greatest political theater of them all, which would be the Trump-Hillary rematch. I think that would be the election that would end the United States as any kind of a functioning entity whatsoever. But anyway, Nora O'Donnell with CBS sat down with Hillary Clinton, and let's see if we can get to this quote. As I said, I haven't even played this clip. It was just funny enough from the headline.
Would you ever run for president again?
No. But I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we have a president who respects our democracy and the rule of law.
There it is. Hillary Clinton says she wants to make sure, boy, they got to it quick in this clip. The clip's 2 minutes and 40 seconds long. I was glad we didn't have to sit through and listen to too much of her. This is Hillary Clinton saying she wants to make sure that whoever holds office respects the rule of law. Hillary Clinton, known to have violated from her days as just the First Lady of Arkansas to First Lady of the United States with Whitewater, every scandal that plagued the Clinton White House and every scandal she's been involved in ever since then, a known criminal actor has infested the deepest levels of our government. She wants to make sure that that whoever takes over will be adherent to the rule of law.
President again?
No. But I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we have a president who respects our democracy and the rule of law and upholds our institutions.
What if Donald Trump runs again?
He should be soundly defeated. It should start in the Republican Party. Grow a backbone. Stand up to this guy. And heaven forbid, if he gets the nomination, he needs to be defeated roundly and sent back to Mar-a-Lago.
The Florida mansion now.
Okay, so I don't care about the rest of it. I just found it. It's just, you know, this is just, we live in some weird, weird times. Now, the fact that this Nora O'Donnell character, she is the, at least last I saw, I haven't watched a national news program in months. Last I saw, Nora O'Donnell was the, the host of the evening news chair, the anchor of the CBS Evening News. The fact that she did not crack up a little bit when Hillary Clinton announced that she wants to make sure that the rule of law is followed by whoever occupies the White House. The fact that she can keep a straight face just shows you how morally bankrupt our media has become. Anyway, I tell you what, I want to get to this other stuff because I had yesterday, there's a guy that is like an advisor to the World Economic Forum. What's his name? Harari? Johan? I'll look up his name. I get him confused with another author that I really like, so I want to make sure I don't implicate the good author with this guy's names. But, I mean, the point is this ruling class literally trying to kill us? Now, there's a lot of people who immediately say yes. Now, I'm one of these people. I don't doubt that. And what this guy says is on the minds of the oligarchs of the planet, not just us here, but we're going to take a look at what's taking place in Europe right now and what's taking place in the United States as well. This is going worldwide throughout Western governments. This has been a theme running through this show as I just am amazed at watching people sit down and take this. You've got the French president saying the end of prosperity is here. And really, that's not really talked about that much. I haven't heard it on other shows or anything. This is one of those statements made where, to me, that's pretty huge. If you wanted prosperity and freedom, you wanted a high quality of life, people from around the world flocked to Western nations, be they European nations, to the United States, to Canada, to Australia. Just a different vibe, right? Just kind of that's where civilized society and the biggest businesses and jobs and opportunities for advancement were in these Western powers for the one of the leaders. And he's not the only one to come out and say, look, you've had it too good too long, little people. And of course, none of these people are going to alter their way of life at all. But these leaders are announcing to everybody, this is the end. You've had it so soft. People need to toughen up. Buy more jackets. Boris Johnson from the UK. I played the clip where he said, go out and buy yourself a new kettle. It'll save you $10 a year starting in 2 years. I mean, these people, they hate you. They look at you. We treat our dogs with a great deal more love and respect than these world leaders treat human beings. And I've known this for a while when I've realized the warfare state that really would send our troops halfway around the world to fight and die in the sand for nothing but power and profit. It has nothing to do with national security. And when you realize there's a class of people, and that's not just the United States, countries around the world and throughout history, the ruling elites just need meat puppets to go out and fight their battles for them. They don't care how many of you die. They don't care how many of you are maimed, as long as you accomplish their geopolitical goals, which do nothing but entrench their power and their profit. And when you realize that is the mindset to these kinds of people. And again, it's not just the United States, not just Western powers. This happens in Africa on a daily basis. They'll send out the hordes to go engage in battle to prop up some kind of a dictator in a third world country. I mean, this is just, these are the people that seem to rise to the top of governmental organizations. And that's why, as a libertarian, I realize governments are just bad. You cannot trust people to run your lives or demand things of you. But these elites, the cloak is coming off. They are just saying straight to your face, it's over. It's over for you people. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Europe, particularly in Switzerland, a formerly very free and prosperous place. Great quality of life in Switzerland. As a matter of fact, it's one of those places I thought about bugging out to. I actually have a woman who's got some connections to Switzerland, and she and I have talked about it before. Maybe we'll just end up in Switzerland. It's really a beautiful, beautiful country. Not anymore. It's off the list now. I'll have to break it to her. I'm not going there. But they've been very free. What they're doing there, and it dovetails with at the exact same time what's taking place here in the United States. California and Texas are enacting things exactly like this. So we're going to talk about kind of this coordinated takedown of Western societies by the people who rule over us. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. If you tuned in to get any news on the Queen's health, oh, man. You know, I think about what the British citizens are going through right now, and we're about to talk about it a little bit. And to think that this fawning, heaven forbid that the 96 years of obscene wealth an opulent lifestyle of this one woman who just won the lottery of life by being born to a family, heaven forbid that come to an end. The worship of the royals in Great Britain is mystifying to me. Mystifying. I have the same view here. People who really support a political party or a politician, don't hold them accountable, just fall in love with people. I broke my addiction of hate watching the NBC Today show. Thank goodness. It's been very healthy for me. I do not wake up my day. It did give me some energy, I will say. It didn't take but about 45 seconds into an NBC Today show broadcast for me to get fired up and ready to come into the radio station and do a show. They would anger me, but I don't watch it anymore. And I cannot imagine the wall-to-wall coverage on these networks of the Queen's health. Oh, dear. Queen Mum. I'm reporting on pubs that have been in families for generations are at risk of going out of business. Power bills going from $800 to $9,000 over the course of just a couple of months. 60% of British manufacturing is at risk of closing right now. But they do have a new prime minister now. A new, air quotes here in the studio, conservative prime minister. She just bailed out the entire energy industry in these areas. Now, she didn't do this by removing the ridiculous sanctions against Russia, because this is a planned takedown of Western societies. She's a huge Russia hawk. She loves the war and anything that we can do aggressive towards Russia. She will allow her people to suffer. But what she's going to do is she's going to print up a bunch of money in England and send out little energy stimmy checks to the people of Great Britain. Now, she has done some things, which is increased drilling. I believe she's lifted a ban on fracking, so she may be actually trying to get some more energy produced in and around Great Britain. But her first reaction is to start sending out checks because she's a, air quotes here in the studio, conservative leader. So my interest in what's going on with Queen Mum is just completely non-existent, except for my fascination of the people who swoon over people who rule over them. It's a strange Stockholm syndrome. Different country, but I guess it applies to England. So Switzerland, this is what's happening in Switzerland, and I'm going to, you know, I don't know people. I'm fascinated by these things because I'm waiting for that moment where the commoners of Western countries lose the civilized side of themselves and start dragging some of these politicians and bureaucrats out of these buildings by their hair. I think this moment is coming, like Sri Lanka, and I'm just kind of waiting and watching, see when it's going to happen. Switzerland, as I said, a pretty formerly free country, very prosperous place. New legislation covering Switzerland's energy supply will make heating homes to more than 19 degrees Celsius unlawful in the event of an energy shortage. In addition, hot water should not be heated to more than 60 degrees, and portable electric heaters, saunas, and heated swimming pools are prohibited. Swiss citizens found to be in violation of the country's new heating rules, which prohibit warming homes above 19 degrees Celsius in the winter, could face daily fines up to 3,000 Swiss francs and up to 3 years in prison. Now, you know automatically that there is an elite group of people in Switzerland, and there's a great number of them. I do not imagine that the Swiss bankers will be subjected to these laws. But for the average Swiss citizen, you're facing up to $3,000 a day, 3,000 francs. I'm not sure what the exchange rate is these days, but 3,000 francs and 3 years in prison because you heat your home to a comfortable level. Who was this guy? One of their guys running the show over there said, the draft ordinances are based primarily on the fact that the vast majority of the population respects the laws. And basically what he's saying is, you know, we don't expect to fine a whole lot of people and jail a whole lot of people on this because most of you will do what we say. Economy Minister Guy Parmelin, told a fresh press conference at the Federal Council last Wednesday that Switzerland is, quote, not a police state, unquote. But it is understood, as reported by Swiss news outlet Blick, that there may be spot checks undertaken to ensure people are complying with the rules. This is Switzerland. Now, if you think that those kinds of things won't happen here, understand that we've just had, within the past few hours, and maybe still ongoing, out in California, they've declared a climate emergency. And people are not allowed. I mean, this has been going on for some period of time, not allowed to water your lawns. But most recently, in California, you're not supposed to charge your electric car during peak times. Air conditioners needed to be turned up. No more comfort for you in California. They've got a climate emergency. It's always these emergency powers. But even in red state Texas, it was last week, wasn't it, that one of these energy smart home providers took control of the thermostats of people. And when they had a heat wave in Texas, which tends to happen from time to time if you've ever lived there or seen one of those scary maps with the big red blotches on them, a heat wave in Texas, this company took over the thermostats of Texas citizens. I believe 22,000 people had these smart things set up in their homes. They went to try to turn make their house a little cooler. Didn't happen. They were unable to change the settings on their air conditioner in Texas. So these kinds of things are coming. This is the takedown of Western civilizations. The end of your comfort, the end of your prosperity. If we allow it, I'm not saying it's going to accomplish itself. I believe there will be some French Revolution moments, not just in France, but everywhere else. Of course, it is the French president that comes out and says the end of prosperity is here. But I wanted to talk. I'm going to take a quick break and come back and listen to some of the comments by this Harari character with the World Economic Forum. He's basically like one of the top advisors to Klaus Schwab. He wrote a book called Sapiens that was recommended to me very highly by a friend. He was really fascinated by the book. This was long before any of us really understood the thinking of this man. I'll be honest with you. I got it on an audiobook. I was doing some traveling. It was horrifically boring for an audiobook and a drive. So thankfully, I've not consumed any of this guy's literary work, but we're going to listen to just some of the comments that he has made talking about us. And you know, us being not them. And this whole show is based around, it is not you versus your neighbor. It's not you and your liberal cousin that should be having problems. It's not you and your Trump-supporting uncle that should be having problems. You have to understand, this is no longer a right or left issue. Plenty of things to disagree about, plenty of things to debate. I'm all for us separating ourselves and moving into separate regions of the country and governing ourselves in different ways. If you want to live under the kind of government that California is providing, go with God, knock yourselves out. I don't think it's going to work out well for you, but you can go try it. I don't hate you for it. I think you'll suffer enough from your own bad decisions for electing these kinds of people, these Democrats who seek to control your lives. But for a lot of people, there's no telling you that. You'd have to experience it yourself. And so go move to California, go move to some of the blue areas, and you'll get what you've been getting. This is not a right-left issue. This is an us versus them. And the them is such a small little group of people. Unfortunately, they have surrounded themselves with a police state. You know, it's very interesting to me. Joe Biden did his horrific speech last Thursday where he basically declared war on about 74 million Americans. And it was not a mistake. It's a very, very creepy speech. It certainly feels like they're trying to set something up. People that I've never heard use the term false flag are now using that term. They can sense it coming. There's going to be something that is done that is blamed on Trump supporters. Joe Biden has already set this up, and it works, too. Listen to this. First of all, the majority of Americans, 56.8%, thinks Biden's declaration of war on Trump voters was a, quote, dangerous escalation in rhetoric, which was designed to incite conflict among Americans. This was a poll done by the Trafalgar Group. So people, 56.8%, agreed. And obviously, those aren't all Republicans. They thought that Biden's speech was a dangerous escalation in rhetoric designed to incite conflict among Americans. What should worry Democrats is that 62% of independent voters agreed with 89.1% of Republicans who said the speech was a dangerous escalation. But there, if you have to understand the reason that Joe Biden did this, is this next one. This is from Reuters. Days after Democratic President Joe Biden gave a fiery speech attacking former President Donald Trump and his Republican allies as an extremist threat, a Reuters Ipsos poll completed on Wednesday found a majority of Americans believe Trump's movement is undermining democracy. 58% of respondents in the two-day poll, including one in four Republicans, said Trump's Make America Great Again movement is threatening America's democratic foundations. See, Joe Biden, the political lever pullers, this stuff works. People buy this stuff. Now, you and I wouldn't. We just always have to remind ourselves, we're such a minority. People who actually pay attention, who are not swayed by mainstream news. We understand that politicians and governments lie, that the media is just spewing. It's a fire hydrant of lies coming out of the mainstream media. We have to understand that the vast majority of people in this country, they don't even know that. It's hard to believe, isn't it, that they haven't caught on to this, but they haven't. So Joe Biden's speech, as far as the polling and how many people were swayed to believe that Trump supporters are some threat to democracy, not realizing that the real threat to everybody's way of life are these governments and throughout Western countries, and most specifically here in the United States. It's not that you're an enemy of the state. It's that the enemy is the state. That's what libertarians have known for decades. Well, we've been put on the sidelines. But anyway, I'm going to take a break and come back with some of the quotes from this guy at the World Economic Forum. It tells you why they're going to let Germans freeze this winter. It's why they roll out experimental gene therapies. Boy, I've got a sad story I won't have time to get to today, but it's why they do these things. They see you as the same way when you walk down the street and you see ants. This is how these people at the top of the heap see you. And I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. I don't care if you voted to elect some of these people. These people at the top, they don't care about you. They might want to harvest you for a vote every now and then. They certainly will pick your pockets to fund their plans. But they don't care about you. You're just not even considered by them. Even some of those politicians you think love you, they don't. I'll show you what the World Economic Forum's saying when we come back. Stick around.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
So there are big policies being rolled out here in the United States and Western countries around the world, Europe, Australia, largely around climate stuff. So I've already covered the fact that they're making people very uncomfortable. People in Germany could literally freeze to death this winter, not being able to afford energy. They're going out and chopping down forest for wood all of a sudden in this very advanced, richest country in Europe. And you really have to understand the mindset of the people running this stuff. This is not a left-right issue, even though they've tried to couch climate change as some kind of a left-right issue. That's what keeps everybody fighting amongst each other, and we don't really notice what's going on at the top. To any Democrats or liberals out there who have bought in, it's always funny to me to see liberals and left-wing people think they're the radicals out there, the change agents, when they agree with BlackRock and Goldman Sachs, the World Economic Forum, which is some of the wealthiest people on planet Earth. They've got you as their foot soldier, and you think you're some kind of a freedom fighter for planet Earth. You're not noticing who you're in bed with? But I want to read some quotes. This guy's name is Yuval Noah Harari. He is a big advisor to Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. He's done a TED Talk. You can go find this on YouTube. But I want you to listen to some of the quotes from this guy. And a lot of these policies that are rolling out of the World Economic Forum are the things that are causing Swiss citizens to be threatened with imprisonment if they heat their homes to a certain degree. These are the people behind the alienation trying to take natural resources off of the market, both here or whether it's a war with Russia. These are the people behind it. Listen to what this guy says. People realize, and they're correct in thinking that, quote, the future doesn't need me. You have all these smart people in California, New York, and Beijing, and they are planning this amazing future with artificial intelligence and bioengineering and global connectivity and whatnot, and they don't need me. You hear what this guy is saying? He's saying, you may be thinking that you're really not necessary in this planet anymore. And he says, you're correct in thinking that. He continues, if you go back to the middle of the 20th century, and it doesn't matter if you're in the United States with Roosevelt or if you're in Germany with Hitler or even the USSR with Stalin, and you think about building the future, then your building materials are those millions of people who are working hard in the factories, in the farms, the soldiers. You need them. You don't have any kind of future without them. Now, fast forward to the early 21st century, when we just don't need the vast majority of the population, because the future is about developing more and more sophisticated technology like artificial intelligence and bioengineering. So what he's saying is, we needed people back in the day. I mean, you needed somebody to run the machines. You needed somebody to go out and fight the wars for the elites. We don't need you anymore. Now you're really just taking up space. Listen to this. This is a top advisor to the World Economic Forum that is very powerful. Now you go look at people who attend World Economic Forum events. They are the upper crust. They are the people that we have allowed to rise to the top of our societies. Here is the top advisor to the World Economic Forum. He says this, quote, most people don't contribute anything to artificial intelligence and bioengineering, except perhaps for their data. And whatever people are still doing, which is useful, these technologies increasingly will make redundant and will make it possible to replace these people. This is a technocrat. Jameson Haygood talks a lot about the technocrats. This is like the technocrat's technocrat. He's saying, we used to need people. We don't even need you to run the machines now. Soon they'll have essentially robotic wars. They're not even going to need you on the battlefield anymore. Right now, they still need meat puppets, so they do actively recruit. He goes on to say this. Science is replacing evolution by natural selection with evolution by intelligent design. Not the intelligent design of some god in the clouds, but our intelligent design. And the design of our clouds. These are the new driving forces of evolution. So this is their plan. And boy, it sure would be nice for people to realize that, you know, this is, it doesn't matter if you're on the right or the left, we've got bigger fish to fry than, you know, and I watch people that won't get together this Thanksgiving because they have, you know, they voted for different people. But you're all expendable. Any of you who think you're in the club because your guy gets into power here, or your guy gets into power there, it's not happening. They think you are completely expendable. You're just a resource, and really they don't need you anymore. And this is why they will let Germany freeze. This is why they will imprison Swiss that try to get some kind of comfort. This is why they'll take control of your thermostats in Texas. Because your comfort doesn't matter. And we've built this protection around them that just makes them almost immune to what anything that we think at this point. Anyway, it's pretty amazing stuff. I suggest you go take a look at the TED Talk for a wake-up call. Be right back.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and we're here with Starla Brown. Starla, or somebody come from Americans Prosperity, comes in every Thursday, and we take a look specifically at economic issues here in Mississippi when the legislative session or when they're planning things for our state. That's where Americans for Prosperity here, the local chapter, really gets involved. But kind of during an off-session thing, we end up talking a lot. Americans for Prosperity does a lot of national campaigns as well, particularly based around debt and spending, government spending, and explaining what inflation actually is, which is a consequence of government spending. So we got Starla in here today, so we'll talk about some of these things. Starla, I appreciate you joining me yet again.
Yeah, it's good to be here this week again. Since last Thursday, there's a lot that's happened on the federal policy level, right? And we can start with the president's speech.
Boy, did you see that thing?
Wow, yeah.
Holy cow.
Unfortunately, I was at a church and a Take Back Mississippi meeting, so I didn't, I have to admit, I didn't watch. I figured there'd be enough outtakes. But when I got home, the first outtake I saw was the picture that's been floating around.
Yes.
And I had to do a double take. I was like, oh, what happened to presidential speeches and addresses? You know, normally it's a walk out, right? The door's open.
Right.
There's the podium.
In a normally lit room.
In a normally lit room.
Maybe a couple of plants behind them. Maybe a flag.
Exactly. And I was like, what's this? Because at first I was like, I honestly didn't think it was real.
Yeah.
And I think that was just kind of a reaction of saying, wow, we've been talking about some of the failed policies of the Biden administration. We talk about this all the time, you and I do, right? But it's this notion of, hey, we're kind of heading towards socialism, started to look like communism when you're looking at that picture,
yes.
Right?
There was totalitarianism,
for sure. Exactly. There was it was.
Well, and to understand, that was not a mistake. I mean, that was not some low-level staffer who just put together a set, nobody checked off on it, and then maybe it came off looking a little creepy. I mean, that was a deliberate message for whatever they're trying to send. Did you see what CNN did?
I don't know if I saw. I might have, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure which piece you're talking
about. CNN during they changed the colors from that blood red to a pink.
Yeah, and you could see the video. Like I saw the video posted on social media, and you could see that change. Like someone was just literally videotaping their television to some extent.
Yeah,
yeah.
So they realized, you know, the optics were probably a little too intense for a lot of people, and a lot of people were looking at this very creeped out. And I was just thinking to myself, I don't even think it, during the times of the Soviet Union and the propaganda networks back in the old Soviet Union, they probably didn't have the technology to be able to live time start trying to change the narrative on something right in front of the eyes of people. But how disingenuous is that? How creepy is that of CNN to try to, you know, give some cover to this speech live time like that? With it, I mean, that's obviously was very
Well,
deliberate.
And I think I saw something else, and, you know, assuming, you know, the old picture is correct, but there was this sort of this comparison, you know, the fist raised in the air.
Yeah.
there was an old picture of Hitler sort of in that same pose. Yes. And stance. And, you know, you sit there and you're kind of like, okay. But whatever person decided this, right, whoever decided this is what we're going to project, I feel like they had to know this is not the projection that a president that we would be accustomed to. And the reaction from the American people has been such that it was definitely noticed. So if you weren't all woke about what's going on with these failed policies and what's happening at the federal level of government, you should be now.
Well, the only problem is that these things tend to work. And so I read a couple of polls earlier. 56.8% of Americans think that speech, which was a declaration of war against Trump supporters, which is just beyond creepy in its first place, 56.8% of people thought that was a dangerous escalation in rhetoric designed to incite conflict amongst Americans. So you're right. People caught on to this. That included 62% of independent voters, and obviously the vast majority, 89% of Republicans, but 62% of independent voters saw that and said, That's pretty bad. You know, you're attacking. But here's why they do these things. Days after Democratic President Joe Biden gave a fiery speech attacking former President Donald Trump and his Republican allies as an extremist threat, a Reuters Ipsos poll completed on Wednesday found that a majority of Americans believe Trump's movement is undermining democracy. 58% of respondents in the two-day poll, including 1 in 4 Republicans, said Trump's Make America Great Again movement is threatening America's democratic foundations. So what they framed in this thing, that speech, had some effect. People watched that and were, you know, it's always about alarm, you know.
Right. That pollinate, that sense of unease, right,
yes.
And creating that.
Because that was very much like the speeches of George W. Bush outlining the axis of, we've got to go after Iraq. I mean, that was the style.
Evil, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely that type of speech. The problem is what it does and all the bad things that it does, but what it really doesn't do is it doesn't address the problems.
No.
In any way that this nation is facing, especially those economic issues.
But is it designed to just distract from them? I mean, we know they're not going to solve them.
Because here's the thing. There are plenty of people out there. And, you know, we've talked a good bit about the True Cost of Washington campaign that we've done all across the country and are still doing, right? Well, there's so many events still kind of going on where we roll back the price of gas to $2.38 a gallon, which is what the national average was on the day that Biden took office.
Yeah.
And story after story, person after person in line for this cheaper gas, and some waiting hours, 3-4 hours to get it, right? And if you're willing to stand in line, right? I'm bad if there's two cars in front of me, right? Even if I'm paying $5 a gallon at some point, right? I'm like, okay, I can't wait in line. But that's just my impatience. The thing is, there's just story after story after story. And it's not just about the gas, because people aren't just telling us about how the gas is impacting them. They understand, they're starting to understand that price of gasoline filtered into other parts of their life. It raised, you know, like how it connects everything else, energy as a whole, the out of control spending. We've been talking to people about that and what causes inflation, right? So that mindset of, you know, the government prints more money, they send you, you know, more money, they raise, you know, we talked a little bit, you know, in the break here about entitlements, which we'll get into a little more. So the problem that I see is, I think people are starting to understand. I mean, I think there are some average Americans out there not completely politically engaged saying, hey,
yeah,
I was doing pretty good.
What the hell?
A couple of years ago, right? I mean, other than COVID and some things that happened, right? But, you know, there was a lot to do with that. Obviously, I'm not negating that there wasn't an impact on our country from COVID, because there was, because we got locked down and shut down our economy. So,
well, it wasn't from COVID. It was a response to COVID.
It was a response
hysterical
to COVID,
response.
Right, right, exactly. So the thing is, you know, we want, you know, as we say, we want to emerge stronger, not weaker when we're coming out of something like that. And so when you go to the policies that we have now and the inflation we have now, we are not emerging stronger. We're emerging weaker. And the power is shifting completely towards government and less about the people. And I do believe that people are doing that. So that narrative you're talking about, that paradigm shift that they're trying to do is, yeah, is it politically motivated? Of course. November's coming.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
there's got to be a fear there that there's some movements across this country of people are saying enough.
Yeah, when you're desperate with a record of failure like the Democrats and Biden have over the last 2 years, you've got to make it's essential to vote against the other side.
Yeah,
and I mean, this is what elections have become. It's not so much voting for anything anymore. It's always trying to stop the other side because each side uses as many scare tactics as they can about the other side. Now, I will admit there's a lot on the left to be scared of these days. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, we just don't seem to, we don't have people who are going to get things done that are, sure.
And I think we can go back to the election cycle even of 2010, right?
Oh, yeah.
We can go back to that. And I think that we see that was what sort of started us on this trajectory of voting against something instead of for someone. And so, you know, trying to find people out there who are truly policy champions, look, I'm never looking for that person who's 100% because I don't expect to sit in a room with 20 people of any statute and say,
agree on everything.
So, yeah, and talk about it and say we agree on everything. But I think if we can get to some pretty high percentage of common ground, especially around some of those basic economic things that we know are going to work versus not work, right? So you can't keep putting policy out there that just feeds inflation and expect things to change. And so the problem is, you know, the gimmicks that were put in place, oh, gas is coming down, you know, it's this and that. But you know, I'm still sitting here wondering, kind of sitting on the wall with this a little bit about, like, hey, what happens when some of those gimmicks are up, right? Because some of them are yeah. short-lived. And what are you doing on the other side in terms of spending? Because, you know, we're coming up in the end of the year. We all know what happens on the end of the year. Omnibus, right? And so budgets. And I don't think anybody's, you know, rallying to shut down the government at this point. So I think, you know, we've got a lot before us. And the idea is, well, people are hurting, so let's help them. But what we're doing to help them isn't getting them out of poverty. It isn't stopping inflation. In fact, it adds to it, right?
Well, yeah. Did you see what the new conservative prime minister of England just did? She's going to send out stimmy checks, energy stimmy checks. She's going to cap prices, meaning what they're going to do is they're going to cap energy prices in England something around maybe £2,000, where people were facing £6,000 a year for energy. She's going to cap that for the citizens at £2,000, meaning the government's going to take the hit on all of it. This actually is a bailout to energy traders and energy companies, but the people will get their break on power, but it's the government printing up more money. So the inflation is just going to squeeze out into everything else.
Yeah.
So, and this is conservative leadership, you know?
Sure, right. I mean, these are the conservatives. Well, when you manipulate the economy, there's a false sense for those who sort of benefit, right? The person getting that check and saying, oh, wow, I needed that, or I'm not going to have to pay this. For a lot of people who just don't understand how this all works, right, and piecing it together, there's sort of a false sense of security for them that should not be there.
No.
The fear should not be lying in, okay, we've got some issues here. The fear should be in what the government's actually doing, because for the longer term,
we're not long-term thinkers.
Right.
This kind of feeds on itself, because what I'm seeing is, okay, so in that scenario, so you create a problem. You know, government overreach during the time of COVID destroyed our economy.
Sure.
It made people so desperate, so many people so desperate that lost jobs and just, I mean, we had a real economic crisis here. So the government comes in and sends out a check. Now, you can explain all day to people, you understand that these stimulus checks are going to create inflation down the road. But for somebody who is so desperate because the government has cut their legs out from underneath them economically, it may cause inflation, but I need that check today. You know, it's kind of like the worse things get and the more involved government gets, they make things worse. But at the time, you've got so many citizens that they've got to take that check. They'd like to fight against it. You know, they know it's probably not the right thing to do. It doesn't feel normal, but I need that money now. So talk about a slippery slope.
Right. It wasn't just individuals. We had businesses stood to lose. And so, you know, we had the PPP program. But you know what's interesting? And I've only seen I've not seen enough to put together a, you know, there's probably some study out there with some, you know, larger numbers, but, you know, I've looked at bits and pieces, but there was a lot of fraud, a lot of fraud.
Of course.
And every time, it seems like to me, like I feel like this, I don't know if I'm the only one who kind of notices this, but I feel like whenever the government induces some sort of large, you know, economic stimulus package, fraud and corruption just rue the day.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just like they just.
Right. And that's, you know, that's what should outrage people. But again, when people get so desperate, they're like, well, I know there was a lot of fraud, but boy, I needed that $1,200.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just.
And look, there could have been some safety net issues where it made sense. Right. I mean, because if you're telling people like, hey, you've got a great thriving business, but I don't want you to open it up for the next 12 months. Right. And do any business. Then you're saying, well, OK, what am I supposed to do? And there were some people who stood strong and fought that. And you know, kudos to them.
Too few.
Yeah, too few. It was too few. It was too many people who just said like, oh, I'll accept this.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, 6 months or so into it, there were a lot of people started to go, you know, and some states did better than others, obviously, with reopening. But the thought process of, OK, you know, here's some an emergency, you know, type scenario. But the problem is, you know, again, the system of applying for it. There were people who didn't even own business. There were a ring of people I saw, might have been actually back in Florida, but I won't say 100%. A ring of people who actually had come together. These were people who didn't own businesses. I don't even know if they had jobs. And frankly, we're not contributing to society the way that I would like to see them contribute to society. But they were very good at putting together some false documents. Now, they eventually got caught, but for a period of time, they were living large off of our tax dollars, right? Through a fraudulent receivership.
Sure.
And many of the LLCs or companies didn't even exist. So I'm saying to myself, how did the government get it so wrong to not even be able to hand out?
They
it's not just handing out the money. Can you at least hand it out to the, you know, to something legit, right? So,
no, they cannot. They're just the governments are always bad at things, and particularly when you respond in a knee jerk reaction like that. They didn't, they just, oh my God, we just need to send out some checks, and they just set up bare bones of a program and did it. I know a lot of business owners who got money to. I mean, they didn't do anything illegal. Essentially, the legislation was such that we will cover your payroll for 3 months if you keep people employed. There were a lot of businesses that weren't going to shut down anyway. Law firms, they weren't shutting down. So they still had, they just got the government to pay their payroll. And the people that owned the firms just ended up pocketing an extra $60, $80, $100,000 in profit. I mean, this was how the government set this up. You just keep people employed and we're going to pay the payroll expenses for you. I was kicking myself that I've almost always owned a business and had an LLC of some kind. I didn't have one. I was like, I can't believe, I owned a janitorial business with 35 employees. Nothing changed in that. You still had to clean up these offices at the end of the day. But the payroll was, I wasn't involved anymore. I'd already sold the business. So you just had 3 months of not having to make payroll. The government paid the wages of those people, and the business owners just got to keep the money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you can look at something else here, too. So when you talk about these entitlement programs we were discussing, and we're talking a little bit about fraud and corruption here. So here's the thing. We're constantly seeing this this drag on, hey, we've got to expand Medicaid. We've got to do more. We've got to do more, 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 right? And going down a road for what should be a safety net and what is supposed to be in place for the least among us. There are people who legitimately need Medicaid, right? There are people who have disabilities. There are people who are just in a bad scenario. And but the problem becomes is like these entities also are full of fraud and corruption.
Absolutely.
As entitlement programs. And so the problem becomes is like some of that is being offset, you know, right? Expanding more into it to pay for that fraud and corruption. And it happens all the time. I mean,
it would be interesting to know what the actual cost, if you took out, because all politicians campaign on, I'm getting rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. Everybody who hears me say that has heard that exact phrase.
Sure.
Waste, fraud, and abuse. This is what they say over and over again, election cycle after election cycle. If you actually stripped out waste, fraud, and abuse of government at every level, what they'd need like 30% of the money they actually. I mean, there's no telling what that number is.
Yeah, yeah. I can. I'll share with you after the break. I'll share with you a great Medicare fraud story.
Okay, great. Because yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about entitlements, and I've got a way to kind of couch this. Something I've been thinking about, and it's another nut job thing that Joe Biden said a couple of days ago. That just, man, it screamed at me. I haven't seen any coverage of it on the mainstream media or on conservative radio, so we'll talk about it here. We're talking to Starla Brown of Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, we're back. We're talking to Starla Brown of Americans for Prosperity. Starla, I wanted to play you this clip from Joe Biden. So here's the way that I kind of couched it and the interest that I have in it. We're fresh off of a couple of weeks now of this student loan forgiveness thing. Conservatives and even people, you know, Democrats who went to trade school or just are working for a living and didn't take or paid for college, you know, however, people are rightfully incensed at this idea that they saved and sacrificed to send their kids to college. Now, suddenly people are just having $10,000 wipe off for their loans. They're exactly right for that outrage. The thing that's interesting to me is that this became a very big story for a good reason. But when you look at the totality of entitlements, wealth transfer, I mean, that's a wealth transfer. That is the, you know, this $10,000 per student is going to be put into the tax burden on all Americans. That does not seem fair. But boy, it's across the board. And this was Joe Biden. I'm going to play the whole clip just because the first part of it is funny. This is where he says he beat Big Pharma. Now, obviously, he's been shoveling money to Big Pharma and this shot program, another $3.4 billion.
And the rebound medication, right?
Yeah, and Paxlovid and everything else. He's just been, Pfizer continues to report quarterly earnings that are just off the charts, but he's pandering to his people but he says something at the end of this clip that just shows you the level of entitlements that exist outside of this college issue.
For decades, many of us have been trying to fix the problem. But for decades, Big Pharma tried to block giving lower drug prices for those on Medicare or anywhere else. For decades, Big Pharma won year in, year out, because they owned chunks of the Congress, because they had to help, like your senior senator, Ron Johnson, who said, no, I want to say what he said.
It's so funny to me that, you know, when you give a speech, you want your people to boo the supposed enemy, in this case a Republican in Wisconsin.
By the way, he's a good senator.
Yeah, he is. But Joe Biden can't. He's so mentally addled that be quiet. I want to tell the story. You know, it's like he doesn't even get social cues. It's just beyond me. But
he said he opposed lowering drug costs because it would result in punishing the pharmaceutical industry. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I mean, come on, man.
Come on, man.
Not this year. We beat Farmer this year. We beat Farmer this year, and it mattered. We're going to change people's lives.
Okay, now I want you to listen to the figures that he throws out here. And what I believe he's referencing to, the new Democrat plan, is this Medicare Part D, which I will say again, Republicans put this thing through. It's the largest entitlement since Johnson. Medicare Part D has got caps on how much out-of-pocket a senior citizen will pay for drugs. And right now, I think the top cap is something like $6,900. I believe the Democrats are proposing to move that down for everybody to $2,000 a year would be your max out-of-pocket for prescription drugs.
You finally beat Pharma. Now Medicare will have the power to negotiate lower prescription drug prices. We can guarantee no senior will have to pay more than $2,000 out of pocket for their drugs for the entire year, no matter whether the bill is $50,000. No more than $2,000.
So, boom. Yeah. So, what that is.
It's a price control, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he's going to price control. The government's going to pay for it. But right. What he just laid out, he said, we will cap this at $2,000. I don't care if the bill is $50,000. So, and to make my point, yes, we just did this horrific $10,000 debt forgiveness for these students. A one-time thing for these students. If they've got $30,000 worth of student loans, they got $10,000 of it wiped off, $20,000 with Pell Grant, whatever. It's a one-time thing. What he just laid out was a $1,000 subsidy to a senior citizen with $50,000 in medical drug cost, he's going to cap them at $2,000. Give them. How many people are on Medicare and Medicaid?
How he thinks he beat Big Pharma? Yes. I don't even see that. I mean, look, his whole policy, I mean, as a whole, if you look at the majority of it, is based on subsidies and cronyism and
bribery
and entitlements and just kind of like, and so just taking our tax dollars and putting them in all the, and as he says, you know, kind of all the right places, right? But it's not, that's not what's happening. I mean, we're sinking further into debt. We're sinking further into an inflationary time. And, you know, I think we posted an article this week on social media, you know, where there were some parents who were speaking out and surveyed that they will not have enough money for some of the basic needs their kids have in K-12 education this year. Just to send their kids to,
yeah,
you know, to the system, you know, public school system, right?
Right.
They're just not going to have enough money for the general expenditures they would have because their kids are back in school. Now, you know, that's tough for parents to have to say. Stuff for, you know, and kids have gone through a lot.
Lagging
behind from COVID, lagging behind. I mean, I get on the education, you know, soapbox here, and there's a lot to say about K-12 education in our public school system. But at the end of the day, we are talking about children. We are talking about kids. We're talking about their future. And so to sit there and kind of, you know, act like, we're going to do this and we'll do that for you. I just don't see it. I see all we're doing is really making their future less.
Well, absolutely.
Less about an American dream.
But I think that people need to understand that, like, this college loan giveaway, as bad as it is, and I think it's terrible, we give these kinds of subsidies to other Americans. This college loan thing was just kind of a big headline thing. But he's talking about a $48,000 giveaway to one senior citizen who is on a bunch of drugs. This is not, and this would be every single senior citizen on Medicare Part D, which is in the tens of millions of people right, that we are going to be giving them. And this is every year. I mean, the college loan thing was 1 year, and it, I mean, a one-time thing. And it is bad. I'm not arguing that at all. But we spend trillions of dollars of wealth transfer from productive people to the point we also are paying senior citizens Social Security money that we do not have. It was spent a long time ago. We're taking money from young people, and we are giving it to retired people now. And people will say, well, I paid in. You did, but the government stole that money, and you let them do it.
That money's not there.
That money is not there.
It's not invested well, right? Not how you'd probably do it if you'd have been on some sort of other retirement plan on your individual.
Yeah, you couldn't have let them have their hands on it. So you know, and it's also interesting to me, too, young people. So most of the college debt forgiveness will go to younger adults. Some people tote student loans for 20 years. Mm-hmm. They'll benefit from it, too. But it's primarily to young people. These same young people are also, if they're working, they are having money stripped from them to fund people who are retired right now. And most of those young people, myself included, and I ain't young, I'm not that far from Social Security. I don't think Social Security is going to be there in any meaningful way. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like everybody's picking everybody else's pockets through the government.
I mean, there were projections, you know, about what year and this year we'd be at this point or that percentage. We used to teach a class called Your Piece of the Pie, right? And we would go into college campuses and younger crowds, and we'd actually bring pies in, and we'd illustrate, you know, on each pie, like how much piece of the pie you'd actually get over by this year or that year, right? What you'd have to pay in versus what you'd get out by the time you reached a certain age. And so by the time we got to the end, of course, there's no pie left, right?
Right.
So pretty much, but there, I mean, a piece, but that was it. This isn't going to sustain itself, but I'd love to see, because, you know, this is projections from a decade ago that, you know, we were probably talking about some of this maybe 5 to 10 years ago, right? In that time frame. I'd love to see what those are now and how rapidly they've changed just since the Biden administration took over to see what that looks like now. So like, hey, well, we're talking about this year. Now maybe we're 2 years closer, right, than we thought we were.
And those projections are always based on a great economy, never include recessions.
Yeah, well, we don't have that right now. So this is.
I mean, they just always, the projections are never right. It's always worse than the projections.
Projections, yeah. Well, I want to share very quickly my Medicaid fraud story and to show you like how how that this fraud and you know we're subsidizing that as well, right? When we get into this piece of it. So several years ago in the construction industry, we sold a home. That price of the house was around, and I'm going to, you know, to protect the innocent, not so innocent, actually, I won't say any names here, but we sold a home to a family for about $2 million was the price of the home at the time. The family then hired the most exclusive interior design firm in Palm Beach. That's primarily where this designer worked. Spent another $4 million, estimated about another $4 million, to decorate enhance the home after we built it for $2 million. So you got about $6 million into this house. In the driveway are a litany of cars, one for all of their children who were often picked up by the community police for playing football on the golf course in this community and all those kind of good things. But all of them had a really nice car. The mother actually had them live in the mother-in-law suite house out there because she didn't want them in her very fancy decorated house because they were not the best of children. But anyway, so this whole dysfunctional family is in the neighborhood. But in the car, we're talking Porsches. We're talking, you know, Jaguars. We're talking very expensive cars, right? Yeah. I mean, they had some cars that probably cost as much as their sofa did, right? So, there was a gentleman, there was a doctor, a very conservative man who'd purchased a house toward the end of the cul-de-sac. And I always called him the mayor of the cul-de-sac because he always knew what was going on in the neighborhood. You know, it was just a very short cul-de-sac with maybe 10 houses on it at the most. And because they were all, you know, sizable houses on the lots. So I'm talking to him one day and he said to me, you know, he's mentioning this particular house and some additional issues that the children had gotten into trouble with because we're building next door to it. And he was concerned about some stuff on our empty lot he'd observed and just let me know that. And he said, you know, I just don't get how the government allows this. And I said, allows what? And he goes, well, maybe. And he said, maybe it's not the government. Maybe it's the judicial system. I don't really know. But he said, you know, and he's a reasonably intelligent man. So I'm like, well, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, you know, that guy, he wears an ankle bracelet, but do you know why? And I was like, no, didn't even know he had one. And he said, Medicare fraud. He made the bulk of probably the money he spent on this house and everything else. Bilking Medicare for a very long time with additional family members who were engaged in it. And we are talking tens of millions of dollars. And I'm saying to myself, how does someone do this? Right. And they're convicted of it and they're whatever. How are you? You know, I mean, I'm living over here. Money. I'm living across town. I'm not going to complain. I loved my home. I loved everything about it. I love what I was able to work hard for and purchase and buy. I wasn't doing badly, but I'm sort of sitting here going, hey, you were bilking Medicare. Again, I'm going to say individually, my tax dollars contribute to that, right? Because there's a lot of money that goes to to that piece, right? Each week that I work. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, how does this happen? And it made me really think, like, this is just one case that I see here.
Right,
you know, we call it white collar crime, right? How many others are out there? And so, you know, come to find out, if you just start looking around, there's a lot more of it.
Yeah.
There's a lot more of it. But how does someone do that? How does someone commit that type of fraud with the government, the tax dollars, and then live like a king?
Well, he had to do some house arrest. Maybe that's all they gave him. And he said, well, I'm going to build myself a hell of a house then.
Right. I'm going to make sure wherever I got to stay, the property I can't leave. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. He had a work release with that, too, by the way. So he could actually go from certain times a day he could actually leave. So it was just interesting to me, like, oh, I'm sorry, you stole all of this money, you built the Medicare system, we're going to give you this little slap on the wrist and you just go live your life of luxury. Back
to opulence. I mean, that's the thing, is that this, to round this out, that this student loan debt forgiveness, it's just, don't stop there. You know, that's a starting point for the money that's picked out of people's pockets and transferred to somebody else, either through the programs like Biden or just fraud and abuse and cronyism and all this other stuff. I mean, it's the 10,000, that's the tip of the iceberg of these wealth transfers. So anyway, got to take a break. We're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. We will be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will it catch me now? I'm falling.
Falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and we're talking to Starla Brown with Americans for Prosperity. So we've really covered entitlements, corruption, waste, fraud, and abuse today. It's
Let's talk about something fun and positive.
Yeah,
then,
what's going on this great here in the state of Mississippi?
Yeah, so, Stone's been traveling. He's been working a lot over in Meridian. As you know, we have a policy boot camp coming up there next Tuesday, the 13th, in the evening at Weidman's Restaurant, and then again on the 20th. It's a two-part series that we're doing. So we're excited about the people that are turning out for that, and may have a couple of people riding over from Jackson with me to attend the event. Certainly excited about our volunteers who are stepping up and helping over there. But what we're seeing is we're starting to expand, and I've got some really good news. On Monday, we have a new staff member that'll be joining us. He'll be residing in the Oxford area, so we'll hopefully get him down here and get him on the show. So, just introduce him to everyone. But he'll be riding Oxford area. But for all you Mississippi State fans, just want you to know he's probably his first event's actually going to be in Starkville. So, so we're
God's country.
Yeah, so we're excited because this expansion, and we're continuing to interview people for another position that we have in the southern part of the state. But I think if you're someone out there who wants to be part of something larger, something bigger, as we begin to continue to build our grassroots movement across the state, and that's what we want to do. We want people who want to be part of a movement who understands that good policy matters, that policy champions matter, right? And that there are some people out there we can get behind. There are some good people in the legislature here in the state of Mississippi who want to do good things. And so we want to support them. We want to be behind them. We want to be supportive of the bills that they're going to have coming out. And so we're looking forward to those. And so right now we're kind of gearing up towards the legislative session and working through some of that. But, hey, I'll have some other announcements coming up for people who are running for office here, hopefully very soon, that that might be of interest. And I think and in the long run, we're finding some really great people in the community, people who maybe
people are getting kind of energized out there.
They are
school
getting
boards,
energized.
Legislature.
And not all people are energized in this sort of negative, you know, I just want to sit on my keyboard on social media and, you know, spread hate and discontent, because that doesn't solve anything. Right. Yeah. You've actually got to engage in a way where you have impact. And so that's what I think separates us sometimes from other grassroots organizations, is that we're going to help you find the tools necessary and a way to do that and a path forward to really focus on something. And, you know, for a lot of people that I've seen over the years engage with us from grassroots who've actually saw some legislation come to fruition, they've been part of it, they've been able to get it across the line, they've been able to make it happen, even if it took 2 or 3 years to get there, right? Yeah. Even if it took that time. I think that's very fulfilling, because at the end of the day, I can just, you know, spew bad things about the government on my keyboard all day long if I want, you know, if I wanted to. But what am I actually doing to shift the paradigm in my community? What am I actually doing out there to find bottom-up solutions to the problems that we have in society? Because not everything, I know the Biden administration wants us to think this, not everything we do has to be about the government doing it, right?
Yes.
Right. And I think that's something we need to continue to talk more about, especially in our state. There's an incredible amount of faith-based communities and ministries out there and nonprofits out there that are doing good work. And it's in all kinds of societal issues, right? It might not even be policy that we cover, but, you know, thank goodness for those people out there who are saying, like, you know what, the government's not the solution. We as a community have to step up and solve this problem.
And we could.
And
we could
all day long. Yeah. And
we have before, too.
Of course.
You know? I mean,
we have a history of doing that. We have a history of doing that. We have a long history of doing it. It's when we don't do that that we start to see the things that we see now, right? When we don't act in a way of mutual benefit with those among us, when we don't give dignity to all people. All people deserve dignity, right? Laws shouldn't carve out and apply just to some people and to a little group over here. You know, that's a corporate welfare sort of mentality, right? The cronyism that exists. You know, laws need to be applied equally and to everyone. And we need to remove the barriers that keep people from being successful.
Oh, yeah.
That's an important piece.
Yeah. All right. All right. We're talking to Starla Brown, Americans Prosperity. One break, and we will be right back.
Calling all citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment today with Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. Anything going on around the Jackson area? We always want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you, how they can get involved.
Sure. Well, you know, we're located at 795 Woodlands Parkway, the first Tuesday of the month of our Torchbearers meeting. And this week, rather than we were going to meet in the office, and then there was a school board matter that I guess came up. And so a lot of the people in the Torchbearers Club went to the school board meeting in Madison County, right?
Yeah,
and
I had to work Tuesday night. I got these staffing issues.
I know. The labor force, right, these days. So, yeah. So we decided to take our group out and just be there and support some people that were speaking and working in that environment. So our Torchbearers Club is normally the first Tuesday of the month in our office, and we just invite everybody to come out. If you want to get engaged, it's a great way to do it. You know, we aren't always in our office because we're out in the community a lot. And this past week, we partnered with a City Heart Church to bring some water forward for them to do some distribution. We wanted to give back to the community. And so, you know, it's people are still in a tough situation there, right? I know you're kind of
a mess.
you live in Jackson.
I brushed my teeth with Jackson water this morning. So far, so good. Knock
right,
on
yeah,
wood.
You made it through the show. That was really important to me, right?
I'm not
but,
green, am I?
Yeah. So, frankly, you know, look, there's a lot of stuff here. And I hope that'll get, you know, worked out in the long run. I think there's a lot of stuff to hear. But leadership has to be key here, and it has to be leadership. We can't be talking, we can't be just throw that word around. It's got to be real leadership.
All right, how do people find you guys online or by phone?
So Americans, if you're on Facebook, you can find us at Americans for Prosperity Mississippi. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter at AFP_MS, and follow us there and find out what's going on.
Great. Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. We'll see you again next week. Thanks, everybody.
No
bye-bye.
Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.